Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Salyer Report a very remarkable researcher and author, Sophia Smallstorm. I am her very devoted subscriber to her newsletter, Avator Update. I've been a subscriber for about a year, but I've been listening to her speeches and presentations for several years. She has a wonderful website, Avator Update, and I'm sorry, the newsletter is Avator Update, a wonderful website about the sky, where you can find also linked to Sophia Smallstorm blog and podcasts. She is, if I'm a person who's passionately interested in looking at the flow of money and economics by place, I would say that she is remarkable at looking at the flow of people and things. You know, you'll be down the cave discovering that there's lithium in this neighborhood and the trucks are pulling up. So what do they use lithium for? Where does it go? And you follow the thread of the flow of the assets. And it's quite remarkable. She seems, Sophia has an ability to stay clear, almost complete immunity to the siren song of the Matrix. Franklin Sanders sometimes says of people that they pine for the treats of the tapeworm. Sophia seems to be remarkably independent of pining for the treats of the tapeworm. And I always enjoy her writing because she's looking deeply into the nature of reality and helping us unpack the nuts and bolts of the Matrix and get down to what's really happening. So, Sophia, I've wanted you on the Salyer Report for a long time. It's a real pleasure to have you on. And to begin, I have to ask you, what inspired you to start writing and speaking?
Well, first of all, Catherine, that was an amazing introduction, and I don't know if I deserve it because I'm sitting here shuddering and quaking. Now what do I have to produce in this hour to live up to that, right?
Actually, so, if you look at what you've already written, I can cite chapter and verse, and you've already lived up to it, so you don't have to worry about the next hour.
Well, all right, I'll do my best. But you asked what inspired me. You know, I always considered myself shamefully apolitical and just completely not interested in the news and politics, because every time I opened Newsweek, it was always about some war somewhere, and the world was constantly at war, and I didn't want anything to do with it. So I took more of a leaning toward sociological analysis, and I've since found out that a lot of that is upside down and incorrect, and that's also kind of building an illusory understanding, you know? And so I had a friend who has a newsletter, and she was badgering me to do this newsletter every month, and I decided to try it, and I used that newsletter, Avator Update, which is not really anything you subscribe to by email. It's sort of a paid subscription, and you can find the newsletter tab on my website, aboutthesky.com. But I did that as a way to collate my own thoughts on a monthly basis, and I would focus myself toward a subject and then write about it in a way that I felt could enlighten people and entertain them. And not just news. You know, my newsletter isn't a bunch of posts about stuff that I've collected from the internet. It's a foray into a subject as a rabbit hole in and of itself, with an attempt to spatially connect it to other things that I've already learned, and really to figure out what kind of a matrix or unmatrix we're in takes abstract spatial thinking, and we're being taught to think in a very linear way that is absolutely, I mean, it's mind-dulling to be linear.
Right.
So once you take on the task of holding a lot of information in your mind and then letting really the back of your mind mull it over, like when you're on walks or driving or in the shower, and then you read something or something new comes on your, you know, attention screen, and you say, wow, the back of my mind is, it's throwing up a little flag or a little beacon, and it's saying, look, this connects to this, doesn't it? And even though in the beginning I used to think that those connections were flimsy that I was making, I began to trust them, and then, to my amazement, I would find all the proof. It would sometimes take a few years. For instance, the chemtrail synthetic biology, Clifford Carnicom of the Carnicom Institute had already found lots of evidence of synthetic fibers showing up in these lesions of people who had this thing called Morgellons syndrome. And he found cross-domain life forms. They call them cross-domain bacteria now, meaning from different life kingdoms. We are from the eukarya kingdom of life, then there's the bacteria and the archaea. And so I had this in my head, and then I watched Aaron Franz's video, The Age of Transitions, and it was all about futurism and artificial intelligence and robots and, you know, robotics, and I just went, oh my God, that's what the chemtrails are doing. They are putting synthetic materials in our biology. This is the start of it. So I started babbling about transhumanism as connected to chemtrails. And I was just telling friends, and everybody said, well, you need to write about this and talk about this, but I had very little to go on. And then it all came into place. You know, there was more work done on synthetic biology that hit the news coming from the mainstream. And I was able to formulate an actual topic, and I was invited to ConspiracyCon to speak, and this is what I spoke about. So that was my first talk, From Chemtrails to Pseudo-Life, Part 1. And then Part 2 was about radiation biology. Part 1 was the synthetic biology. And honestly, I don't know how this happens for me or in me. It's just like my own motor, you could say.
Uh-huh. Well, I think you're very, you impress me as somebody who's always been very, very observant.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever peppered your parents with questions, why is this or why? I can imagine you at a very young age being intensely curious and observant about the world around you.
Well, I was a child who was dragged around the world by parents who were posted to foreign countries. And so I was always the foreigner or the stranger. You know, the Camus, l'étranger means, translated in English to the stranger, but it's really the foreigner. And I had very few books. I went to very makeshift day schools in North Africa, in Europe. I mean, sometimes there were only 3 to 6 kids in a class. I was the only girl in the sixth grade, and there were 5 boys and me. And I didn't have much to read. I had a set of children's encyclopedias and books that, you know, my grandmother would send as Christmas and birthday presents. And the libraries in these schools were very small. And so I started to just read books over and over. I read the encyclopedia over and over. I read the dictionary. I didn't have much to, there was no television or cartoons or anything like that. So I lived in a world where I had to constantly look around me and find new ways of looking at it, you could say.
Right. Well, one of the things I can tell from just reading Avatar Update is we live in a country which is very disassociated from place. So I do a lot of driving. I can pull into a diner, sit in the diner, you know, and let's say the diner's on Route 64, and I can ask the waitress, where is Route 64? And they won't know. Or I can ask a person in the, you know, Walgreens where a motel is that's only a block away, and they won't know. It's really scary, but there's real disassociation from place. And when you read your writings, you're very associated with place. You really connect, you know, what's going on in the place and the physicality of the place with, you know, with whatever is going on. You get a lot of information by observing your place. And that is unique in the United States.
Well, I mean, I wasn't aware of that per se in terms of myself as opposed to other people, but I will say this. We live in the third dimension. This, whether people think it's an energetic trap and it's metaphysically dense and unpleasant and upside down because of what the powers that be have done in it and to it, it is the container of our life. And we need to be able to exist in the container with awareness. So I'm finding now with the addiction to the cellular world and the world of computers and iPads and phones, people are losing their presence in the third dimension. The third dimension is merely, it's a container for what's going on in the second dimension. And it's an annoyance. It's a nuisance, you know, to them. They'll cross the road looking at their phone and a car will blare its horn at them and they jolt. And to them, this is the third dimension signaling to them where they are, but it's a nuisance. Because their life is in this other dimension.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about how reality gets craft. You know, our title for this is "All the World is a Stage," and which is sort of how I think of your writing is mapping out how the stage gets built. But one of the things I most appreciated is the section on your website about hidden technologies that combine mind control with ELF, with the spraying and the reengineering of human bodies and chemistry through the spraying. And so let's dive into that. You mentioned a little bit about the spraying, but maybe if you could walk us through the mind control technologies, then how that fits with ELF, how that fits with the spraying.
Well, do you mean ELFs or electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs?
I'm sorry, EMF.
Yes. So what I believe, I'll start from the top and I'll drill down a little further into it. But I believe that with the future of robotics and artificial intelligence, there is a real push to marry or merge real biology with artificial synthetic biology. And the only way to do that is to force the real biological world to adapt to stresses that are placed on it by, let's just call it science, deliberate man-made stresses. And this is noticeable in the real world all by itself, that if the wind blows against a tree, the tree is going to bend and bend and bend in order to accommodate that force. So biology can only resist stressors so much. And then if it doesn't altogether quit and give up, meaning the organism dies from the stress, the organism will attempt to integrate the stress in a manageable way. And so I think we are being entrained to various forms of artificial modulation and manipulation such that we begin to integrate these forms, whether they are frequencies or whether they are solids, into our own flesh, into our own tissues. And there is plenty of evidence of this already. So does that make sense to you?
Yes, and in fact, I may be skipping ahead. One of the things I've been talking about the last year is there was a wonderful study done by a professor of Cornell about the history of the slave trade in the United States. And one of the things they described was that if you look at the economics, they discovered that the plantations, the large plantations, were able to get a 2% growth in productivity every year, greater than 2%, and reach fantastic levels of productivity by systematic application of whipping. They called it the whipping machine. And after slavery was over, the descendants of the slaves and the free farmers got significantly less productivity than the whipping machine. And I won't bore you with all my work on economics, but I've come to believe that part of basically getting every human online by integrating this technology into them, you're basically creating some technology that I think can receive and send, you're creating a giant whipping machine.
Well, yeah, in the sense that it's a negative influx that's forcing the biology to adapt and change.
Right.
Yeah. Again, you know, the tolerances are being observed. So there are going to be, people talk about depopulation. Oh, they're killing off billions. They're only going to leave 500, million people on the earth. It's written on the Georgia Guidestones. But that may be true. But the process of elimination, the process of collapse, is being very, very keenly observed. And
right.
I believe that there are going to be enormous shelters that will be taken to in the near future by the people who have deployed these programs so that they can receive protection, and the rest of whatever is alive will be left on the surface of the earth in its own holocaust, so to speak, with tremendous stress going on and struggle for survival, which will be competitive. So that is all going to be part of the unfolding. And not everyone, though, will be destroyed by this, by these this competitive, very dire environment of physical conditions. There are going to be those specimens, I'll call them to be technical, that survive, and they will have managed the stress well enough such that their biology will be tolerant of a lot of things that everyone else's biology could not tolerate. So those forms, those specimens, will be used to create humanity 2.0, which will be a very much more mechanical, manageable strain without the resilience that we have. There's right now too much resilience left in the natural world. It's not going to go down easily. And so that's why I think we're seeing the deployment of these programs and platforms concentrating and intensifying. And life is becoming much more difficult, especially on the level of personal health and well-being. And yet we're being taught to turn to the medical system and the state for solutions and protection. So many people are doing this just because they don't know any better. And it's taking real creativity to build your own sort of encyclopedic knowledge of how to manage your health in such a way that you and you can enhance it. You can maximize
right.
on what you have. But look around you and you see the degeneration. People are really, really succumbing to degenerative disease. You see old people with walkers. You see people whose hearts and respiratory systems are failing, whose neurology is failing. These are common modern diseases called Alzheimer's and cardiovascular disease. You know, the systems in people's bodies are failing full on, and people are having part to full body crashes, and it's all caused by too much toxicity, the effect of too many man-made stressors.
Well, if you look at life expectancy, it's falling, from what I can tell, dramatically in the United States, but it is increasing globally, is what the statistics say.
Right, and that may be because the United States is a little ahead of the curve. It isn't that modern medicine is increasing life expectancy in parts of the world. It's mainly hygiene and sanitation.
Right.
Better
right.
infrastructure, you know, drainage and water, sewage, things like that. What improved human health radically in the 1900s was the advent of glass windows in buildings and the practice of using underwear that you changed and washed on a frequent basis.
Right.
So these two things alone, you know, I have a new theory that I'm going to write, I think, my next newsletter about, but it is the sepsis antisepsis theory. So sunlight is very life preserving, and
right.
it is warm, it's drying, it's health giving, it's antiseptic. But nighttime, moonlight has a very different quality from sunlight, and I don't believe it's reflected sunlight at all anymore. Moonlight is cold, and it's damp, and it promotes necrosis and sepsis. And we need that for the cycle of life, because it's the
right.
fungi and the microorganisms that set to work on the earth and the dying materials of the earth to re-render them into nutrients. And that happens during the night phase of sepsis. And when the sun comes out in the day, it dries things up, and that's what it did in houses. It took away the dank bacterial forms that were making people sick. So it's antiseptic. But what's happening is, with all the programs being deployed against us, whether you want to talk GMOs, vaccines, anything and everything, even economics, that is increasing the sepsis half of the cycle, such that we are caving to decay and degeneration.
Right.
And the
I just read the proofs for a great new book on EMF toxicity, and the most important topic in it is light and getting sunlight and minimizing night light.
Exactly. Yes.
Right.
I mean, we go to sleep at night because nature wants to keep us out of that septic moonlight. Now I'm going to get a little more out there. But I believe that this whole Luciferian regime it operates on the worship of the septic light, of moonlight. That is the light of Lucifer. The light of the sun is a different kind of light.
Right.
It's a health-giving light. But the light
right.
of the night...
It's a life-giving light. Right.
Right. The light of the night is the death light. And that's why they do everything at night. They have their nighttime ceremonies and rituals. That's why they're going underground. They're building a Hades. Because they are into the other kind of light, the light of putrefaction. So we thrive on daylight. I mean, look how everybody loves the sun. They want sunny
right.
houses, and they want to be all warm and cozy because that's what promotes health. And the chemtrails themselves, they're spraying, aerial spraying of particulates is a filter upon the sunlight, turning it from warm and yellow into white and cold. So chemtrail spraying promotes the growth of molds and fungus.
Right. Right.
And that's the sepsis cycle.
Right. The chemtrails have had a very... I was driving around the country a lot from 98 on. So I was doing a couple hundred thousand miles a year. And it's just the chemtrails had such a terrible impact on, you know, turning everything moldy and fungusy, from the trees to the houses to the plants, and really blocking out the sun. It was, you know, it was noticeable, the deterioration that resulted.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about, because I believe one of the reasons they're setting up these, it's funny, I've just been listening to a history of DARPA and their discussion of introducing the sensor wall in Vietnam and spending $1 billion to try and put sensors on everything. And you realize, oh, this is the history of what we're dealing with chemtrails, the idea of, you know, basically putting a chip in every atom and being able to, you know, manipulate everything from the atmosphere to thought. But I've always believed that one of the reasons that this is happening is they're trying to get all of life to resonate with their machine and the machine's message, as opposed to resonating with each other, you know, with all living things and the divine. And so it's a competition between the machine and the divine as to who's going to set the resonation on planet Earth.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, and it's as Ray Kurzweil stated, they want the whole universe to be controllable and alive and intelligent. You see, their word for this is intelligent. Our word for it is alive, and only certain things get to have this state called life. But if all of life is embedded with artifice such that it can be controlled from outside, then it becomes dead because it doesn't have its own inner direction.
Right. Right. It comes down to free will. So does imagination, inspiration, free will exist or not? And, you know, it's almost like they're very fretful risk managers, and they can't stand for anything natural to be happening, even though that's where the good things flow from. So they're trying to get the best of both worlds. It won't work. But in the meantime, I always say it just keeps getting weirder.
Yeah, yes, but that weirdness becomes normalcy for the new generation.
Right. They don't know. They don't appreciate.
No, they don't know. And the people who are halfway into that generation, you know, I was listening to a really brilliant interviewer, or sorry, guest. He also is an interviewer, and he was talking about, he comes from the world of technology. He was talking about how the iPhone managed to entrain, I like this word, entrain, and you used it in
right.
your email to me with the notes that you just sent. It, that managed to get women into the world of devices, because before, when it was just computers, it was mainly a world that men had joined. But the iPhone was the female, you know, stepping into the mix, stepping into the picture, because now you could talk to all your kids and manage their whereabouts, and you could text your friends, and everybody has a Facebook page. I don't have any of this.
Mm.
And the only
well, I
way
have a
f- go ahead.
Yeah, I have an iPhone, but I leave it in the car unless I'm traveling. I try to use it as little as possible.
Yeah, same for me. I mean, it's there if I need it, but it's in the car. It's not anywhere else. But the
right.
the way to, people say, well, what can we do? We're just stuck. This is the way the world works now. I'm going to lose business if I'm not on Facebook or the whole social media. I remember a realtor friend of mine saying, she worked for Prudential, and she was told, everyone at the office was told, that they absolutely had to learn how to do social media, or they couldn't participate in the company. So, you know, that then you learn that. It's a job requirement. And it's going to end up being a job requirement that you have a chip in your arm because, you know, you, something. It'll just get more and more weird as you say it. And people
right.
will do it because everybody else is doing it. We really live in a world of monkeys.
Right. Well, the control is very tight. There was just an NBC, I talk about this in the last, I just wrote, finished our second quarter wrap-up. There was just an NBC spot on the news seriously suggesting that you should microchip your children so you know where they are.
Yes.
And you think, how in the world can these people say this with a straight face?
Well, because they've made us very afraid of harm. I truly believe, or wonder, I should say, I wonder. Remember when at Halloween apples were being passed around with razor blades in them?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was something that somebody dreamed up in order to start the whole fear thing rolling, of fear of strangers.
Right. Well, there's no doubt there's been a tremendous effort for the last 50 years to create you know, divide and conquer and fear of strangers and to shut off that kind of communication. Again, you want everybody, you know, communicating with the machine and not with each other.
Right. And I've noticed something, you know, a very wise man once taught me that the real nature of human interaction is cooperative, and that is being knocked down into conflict and competition and conflict, rather than cooperation and harmony and helpfulness. And if you go up to almost anybody and you ask them the time, they will make an effort to tell you the time if they can at all do
right.
so. They'll actually
right.
now, before they used to flick their wrist and look at their watch, now they'll dig in their backpack or their purse for their phone. They'll even turn the phone on. And I tell them, oh, no, don't
right.
go to so much trouble. I'll find someone else. But they want to help you. And that's
right.
what I hope we're going to see when the going gets rough, when it gets really weird and we're all sliding into this state of competition and conflict because we're trying to stay alive. We need to be helping one another in every creative way we can, and we need to understand that we have a common basis, a common good, and that we can enhance each other's life through that rather than
right.
force ourselves to compete with each other for whatever scrap of food there is.
Right. Well, I agree with you. You know, I will say this. I thought in the 90s that there was a great focus on depopulation, and I was watching a presentation not that long ago, and the commentator was a local government official, said, you know, the pressure's off on depopulation because the mind control technology has been so successful. And I think since the tower network went up in the United States, sort of summer 2001, that they've been remarkably surprised and pleased at how successful the mind control is.
Yes. Humans are very easily trained, and they respond very happily to impulses and inputs. We
right.
see that from the Stanley Milgram experiment, you know, administering shocks to your fellow man mm-hmm. just because the coach is telling you, to, instructor is telling you to do it. And you really don't think about it. You don't think about, I don't think humans are they don't plan ahead if they're in a group. I've noticed how dogs don't think ahead. We have dog beaches here, and I used to run across one of the dog beaches on my run. And I would notice that a dog would come bounding toward the ocean and would not have the capacity to see you and understand that it was going to crash into you. Dogs cannot plan in that way. And I don't think humans do much of that either when they're in a group, because they're not working with their wits. They're working in kind of a group think. So,
well, that's why I think it makes an enormous difference if someone understands the nature of the environment. If you understand the nature of the environment and the extent to which there are these hostile forces, you can really begin to navigate. And if you look at our subscribers, I travel around and make an effort to have lunch and meet subscribers. You know, there's a certain percentage of the population that is remarkably immune to the mind control. And, you know, they can fathom that it exists and they can adapt. And they seem to be sort of a world apart of the world that's just kind of falling into the matrix.
Yeah, but these are the people who should be leading the ones that are falling into the matrix. These are the people that those falling into people need to turn to and say, hey, give me some direction. And yet we're the ones who are dismissed as kooks or out there or too much to deal with. But again, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what humanity is going to do with itself. But it's getting more and more entrained into these frequencies. Now, I had a discussion with one of my subscribers who is a very brilliant woman, and I'm going to see if I can get her to do a podcast with me. She's a little hesitant. But she said that the moment we choose a positive action, positive for ourselves or someone else, we start negating the negative frequencies, and we start the healing.
Yep.
And it keeps going. Then it's like a, you know, it's like a domino effect. But that's what we have to model. That's what we have to do. And we break out of the negative entrainment the moment we start doing something that's the opposite of it, with awareness of what we're doing.
Right. And what's interesting is if you look how extraordinarily wealthy the planet is, despite all the different problems, to the extent that we would cooperate and behave that way, you know, we have no economic problems. We have a political problem, but there are no economic problems is what I believe. Well, let's turn to false flags, because you have some of the most intriguing writing on false flags. The one of my favorite allies, Richard Dolan, is in the process of writing a book on false flags. But one of the things you tend to write about in a way which just has me howling and laughing till I cry, is we've seen the development, in fact, of false flags that really, you know, they're fake. So we now have fake terrorist events that are more a movie show than, you know, we have reality TV show putting on terrorist events and false flags. And it's extremely difficult to write about because it's so hard to fathom that that exists. Now, if you do the economics of doing a false flag and trying to deal over a 5-year period with 30 families who are, you know, got the bit in their mouth because they're mad because somebody died, you know, what you realize is it's much easier to put on a reality TV show than to have a real false flag, because death is very difficult to mention and dangerous and expensive. But maybe if you could mention your interest in fake mass shootings and fake terrorist events.
Well, it started with my talk on Sandy Hook, Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions. And this is where I made a distinction between the two-dimensional world of news and print media and the three-dimensional world of real physics and real possibilities. And you could start with something very, very simple and obvious that Adam Lanza, at his purported weight and height and his sickly nature, could not have hefted that many guns and done the kind of killing spree in the amount of time that he was said to have done. So right there, the 2D report is conflicting with 3D possibilities. And then I started studying the photographs of the victims, the children, and I thought to myself, like, why are they dressed like this? They're dressed in really drab colors. And right now, you go into a nursery school or an elementary school, and everybody's in vibrant lime green and neon pink. There's a ton of fleece, you know. And right. None of this, that's not what we saw in the Sandy Hook scenario. We saw clothes that were very dated, and none of these were digital pictures. So they were all scans of actual photographs, and that's when it occurred to me that these are somebody's kids from 10, 20 years ago. So I have now, of course, been fed a lot of material. There are false flags happening all over the world now, false shootings, let's call them, rather than false flags. And I learned that blood is added afterwards to the scene. There's never any blood in the footage, quote-unquote, that we see from the scene itself, the live footage, quote-unquote. But we'll see it in photos later. And that made me think of the fainting at the sight of blood possibility, which is very common. You never know who is going to faint at the sight of blood. It's a very primitive reflex that the body undergoes because it's trying to pretend that it's dead. I mean, there are different reasons for it that people have come up with, but it's a very real fact. People faint at the sight of blood. Even huge football players will do it, and you're never going to know who faints at the sight of blood. So it makes more sense in a false shooting to add the blood later rather than to have your crisis actors and your cops and everyone there and have somebody. Many of the police are actors as well. They're not real police.
Right.
Take the risk that somebody is going to keel over because they saw even fake blood. So then you have this thing called the felony murder rule. And there are people who argue, well, yeah, maybe some people died, but not as many as they said. You cannot create an event where you actually take somebody's life because now you've got murder. And it means
right.
there is a...
And there's no statute of limitations on murder.
And there's a legal right. concept called the felony murder rule. And there is a situation where there's, they call it transferred intention. It's a very slippery slope, but I'll give you an example. If you and I head into a grocery store and we want to shoplift, and that's a very small level crime. But if in the course of our attempt to shoplift, one of us happens to shoot the cashier, and that's a death, then the other one becomes is part of a felonious crime as well. It's called transferred intention. So in these false shootings, they cannot start killing real people. Because first of all, who would volunteer for such a thing? Second of all, you're going to have a situation of transferred intention potentially lassoing in everybody who was present in that event. Whether they
right. didn't... The risk management becomes unbearable because if you have, let's say you have 30 deaths, that's 30 families, and many of them have people who cannot be paid off or bought. You know, they'll keep digging, they'll keep looking, they'll keep talking. And on the other side, you've got a whole lot of participants, and all you need is one to sell you out, and you're in real trouble. So it's a nightmare from a risk management standpoint, and it makes sense that you would much prefer a reality TV show.
Exactly. And the
right.
public is not discerning enough. They'll take the reality TV show. They'll take the Photoshop pictures where nobody could sit in that position with a child on their lap, where the child's head is way too big compared to the adult's head, and so forth. I mean, the public is not discerning. They're not discerning. They love to be hoaxed. They love when the circus comes to town.
Well, I think there's also tremendous entrainment with it. So there's the sense of, you know, group participation and belonging, and the entrainment is very heavy. I must say, one of my favorite pieces in your most recent newsletters was the description of the former soldier who was describing one of the victims in the nightclub in Florida and describing how long it takes to recover from one of these shots and saying, you know, that guy can't possibly be that healthy this fast. But breaking it down in terms of the detail of how those bullets operate, it was a perfect example of anybody who's familiar with the concrete reality of a particular topic pointing out that that this fictional world makes absolutely no sense.
Yes, that actually came from a comment on one of the YouTube videos of a guy who got 4 rounds, I think, and he had wounds that, of course, these bullets always exit the body and they cause hardly any damage, and we see the victims dressed in their own clothes in the hospital bed giving interviews, and they're very alert looking, whereas this particular Marine wrote about his friend who was shot in the butt in a real war on the real battlefield, and it took him incredible long amount of time to recover, and he was weak and faint, and he was a trained combat Marine, you know, so how could any of these people in these nightclubs or wherever else they are, one of the guys apparently put his head under a couch and then having been shot in 3 limbs, all from which the bullets all exited, he had only one good limb left, and with that he managed to lift the couch off his head and crawl to safety. Come on.
I wish, I can imagine just being in the author, you know, the writers who are writing the scripts for these things. I can just imagine being in the room. Okay, so here's my question for you. 5G and virtual reality technology is coming. When 5G is launched, I think probably next year and the year after that, it means the ability to do holograms, the ability to do virtual reality of many kinds. You know, the entrainment goes up exponentially in terms of what it can, what it can do. And we can Pokemon Go the whole physical material reality. What happens when 5G and virtual reality comes out?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but if people respond to the holographic world the way that they're playing Pokemon Go, walking off cliffs and injuring themselves, you know, because they're so intent on finding this whatever it is, I don't even know what to call it because I've never played. But if that's going to be the preoccupation of people who are alive and moving in the third dimensional world that is their true reality, if they're juxtaposing a fiction into that world and they're willing to put all their attention on the fiction imposed on the real world, then forget about it. It's addiction. It's, as you say,
it's
entrainment.
It is addiction. Right.
And the other thing is, I believe that 5G is going to employ the technology called Artemis. Are you familiar with that?
No. Please teach me.
There is a post on my blog, sophiasmallstorm.com. It's called Apple and Fertility. So Artemis is a whole new deployment of signal to devices. We have had cell towers to date. And cell towers are, you've seen them, they're cell towers or antennas. The towers are the very big ones. The antennas are the little globular things attached to light poles and where and whatnot. But they're changing the emissions to this new technology called Artemis. Artemis, I have a picture of it. You can Google it and you can see. It's going to be on every building, every light post. It's exactly what they're saying where 5G will be. So Artemis are these little devices that hunt for receiving devices. So the Artemis transmitter on the buildings, and there will be many on buildings all over the place, will hunt for people who have laptops and iPads and cell phones. And then they'll bathe that device, the receiving device, in a field of radiation. So right now we have the opposite. We have the devices burping and going blip every few seconds looking for the nearest tower or antenna to maintain connection. Now Artemis is the Greek goddess of the hunt and virginity, chastity. And if you look at the logo of Artemis, it is the inverted female reproduction organs. So you've got the two fallopian tubes and the ovaries. And that is exactly what Apple has dreamed up here. It is a very morbid indication of infertility coming to us because it's the fertility system turned upside down in the female. And the devices are going to hunt for us. So that, I think, is how the 5G is going to be deployed, through the Artemis technology.
The thing that I always find so strange about this is that when you look at the business plans of numerous entities, they are depending on significantly lower transaction costs by doing everything through the Internet of Things. And yet, when you look at what's happening with the Internet of Things, we have cyber warfare exploding, and the reliability of these systems are extremely poor and getting poorer. And so it looks to me like two tsunamis headed straight at each other between cyber insecurity and this plan to do everything, you know, through the Internet of Things.
Well, biologically speaking, the exposure rates are going to be astronomically higher, which means that
right.
the collapse rate is also going to get much, much more significant. And I don't think they care about how well we connect to each other. I mean, you can already see that nobody is fazed by a dropped call anymore. It's just part of the way things are. People will
right.
redial you immediately without even a murmur.
Right.
So the quality of our ability to talk and connect and get things done is of much less interest than how much this is going to derail the natural forms of life and take them out of their natural functionality and make them dependent on state solutions and technological solutions.
Right, so the systems are designed for control and surveillance capitalism. They're not designed for the specific function for which we use them.
No, that's a side thing. That's the sideshow.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the hook. That's how you get us in.
Yeah.
Right.
They want you to feel connected and feel modern, but the real interest is to make all these algorithms and study you and create trends from your behaviors and from everything you disclose on Instagram and Facebook and whatever other, Twitter. And
well,
people are willing to do that. Sorry.
I must confess, Sophia, I'm a perpetual optimist, and I just finished a strategic planning process for Solari where the question I asked was, can 1 to 5 million people live happily outside the matrix and have a positive impact? You know, will they tolerate that leakage? And I came to the conclusion that the answer was yes. You know, so even though I agree with you, we're in a period we've got a very dire period to live through, I still think that reading your work, reading the Solari report, understanding what's going on can help you navigate and come at things in a much more positive way and outwit a lot of this. I think it makes if you look at the people who run things, I think they're running things according to probabilities. It's kind of like livestock management. And one of my favorite quotes from Leonard Cohen is, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets through. And I came to the conclusion this year that, we can get something done through the crack. is what I believe.
Sure. The question is, will it be for ourselves and the few that want to do it that way, or will we manage to get it to grow and save everybody else? That's, you know, everybody wants to save the world, save humanity, to improve conditions for as many as they can. I think that's the natural human instinct, in one of them, I guess, in the best view of human beings. But is that possible, in fact, in reality?
I don't know. I think you have to let, you know, I think we can each make a choice. You know, to me, the ultimate question in the system is, can we get 7 billion people to practice the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? And I think we can each make that choice in and of ourselves and try to make a positive contribution. But we have to let, you know, we have to let each human take responsibility. And we can offer a hand, but we can't force it.
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the purest, least invasive way of doing it. And in the effort to contain our zeal in that way that you've just described, we have the highest chance of preserving our own self and sanity in such a way that we remain of potential use to others.
Right.
Because you don't want to make this a Pyrrhic victory, right, where you expend yourself to the point that there's nothing left of you.
Well, I believe it's essential that I remain coherent and do what I can do. And I think any system which is economic has to come down to each person taking responsibility to, you know, be positive in and of themselves and then make a positive contribution to the whole. So I really do believe that freedom and markets work, but I'm not interested in telling anybody else what to do. I'm happy to share my recommendations, but I'm not. I'm trying to, you know, if you look at all the opportunity I have to improve, I don't feel like picking on anybody else. So, well, let's talk a little bit about how we follow your work. I want to put in an incredible plug for your newsletter, which I just love. You know, I savor getting into the jacuzzi and reading Avatar Update. It's very delicious. And as you say, you really dive in deep into one topic, and it can be anything from what's happening to the whales to the Cumberland Tunnel, you know, to false flags. It's fascinating. There's your website about the sky, and you really started pretty much, I would say, on the global spring and then went from there. Is that true?
Well, that used to be my 911 We Know website when I was into the 9/11 story. And then I took that part of it down, and I just left the chemtrail material up. And then I really just moved into the blog and the podcast page. Those are the most active. So,
right. And you're doing two podcasts a month?
Yes. You know, that's how many I can manage. And so many people cancel at the last minute. I don't know how people do several a week. I really don't. I think you have to have producers and lots of different.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
So I do the two a month. And I try to bring out people that don't have an internet presence but are very interesting nonetheless. And I do my blog on a more frequent basis. I was just hacked, actually, and I had to do a massive upgrade of software on all my websites. And so that cost quite a bit. It was a big setback. But anyway, they're up and running, and I have a new platform to work with, so I'm having to learn a little bit. So the blog page is going up, not at quite such a frequent rate, new posts. But I'll get into it. And I have my store, avatarproducts.com. You can find it from the blog. And that's where I share the things that I have discovered that have really helped me. I am very big on iodine and magnesium. And the magnesium.
Oh, God, I live on iodine.
Iodine is wonderful, isn't it? But the magnesium cream, I will be happy to send you some. That is absolutely amazing. Within 1 minute, it starts to dissipate the pain of strained muscles, bumps, bad joints. I mean, whatever it is you have, magnesium cream, the restless leg syndrome, and people have given me all kinds of feedback on it. And it's so nice and rich and soothing, and it just does wonders for the body. We're very, very low in magnesium, and taking it through the skin is the best way to get it, really.
Well, I discovered I was in litigation for 11 years and really couldn't go to a hospital or a healthcare facility. I had to be very, very careful. And so I really fell back on my own resources. And one of the things I discovered was, you know, I don't even think about approaching the medical establishment until iodine and castor oil packs have failed. And they usually, you know, those two things heal 90% of what ails me is what I find. But I'm glad to know about magnesium cream because I'm always ready to do it myself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
no.
Yeah.
Simple
yeah,
thing.
More...
Go ahead.
I think the more we can take responsibility for our own healthcare in this environment and be aggressive about it, because if you look at the stressors, the environmental pollution, for many of the reasons we talked about, many we didn't talk about, are extraordinary. So you really have to be aggressive about staying healthy.
Yes, you have to help your body do its detoxing. And as you know, acidosis is a very baseline condition for disease, and magnesium alkalinizes the bloodstream. So it's important to have it. And the best part about doing topical magnesium is you can put it right where you happen to have soreness or pain. So as it travels into your body, it loosens the muscles in that area and helps with pain. So that's why I like it.
Well, I'm very glad to know of it. I will definitely try it. I will definitely try it.
Yes, well, I have a new shipment coming, and I'm going to send you a tube. It comes in 3-ounce size and 8-ounce pump. But it is something that you should not be without it. Keep it in your car, keep it at home, and just use it liberally. That's my recommendation. Women love it as moisturizer.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. Oh, good. Oh, good.
So, yes, so that's the store, avatarproducts.com, and then the other, sophiasmallstorm.com is a quick way of getting to my blog page, and then you will be at the About the Sky website already.
Okay, well, I really encourage everyone listening to this. One of the things I wanted to do with this Soleri report was just make sure people were aware of you, aware of your work, and so I want them to discover Sophia Smallstorm. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, Sophia, and I can't wait to see what's in the August Avatar update.
Yeah, I will send it out. I'm going to send them out today, and that's another topic altogether, but I will be happy to keep, you know, diversifying as I write these updates. And I welcome people to contact me through the website to say they want to subscribe, but it is a paid subscription, so that's the only drawback. But it's worth it, I hope, at about $4 an issue. So
it's absolutely worth it. It's a great investment. It's a great investment, and it not only is it fascinating, each one, but I would say it's very well written. So, you know, I rarely read one when I don't go back and read it again. It's so.
Thank you.
It's a very good investment. Avatar update. Sophia Smallstorm, have a wonderful day. Okay.
Thank you, Catherine. It was such a pleasure. I really, really am honored. Thank you.
Bye.